And then in the real war, or the real main part of the war, Stalingrad, the siege of Stalingrad was going on at this in September of 1942. So these things were still.
And that's the East Wind.
Right? Yeah.
The East Wind is coming from Soviet Union.
The commies.
Right in there too, yeah.
Well, we've been talking about a light comic serious thriller masterpiece, Sherlock Holmes and the Voice of Terror. And we've been here with Lisa Neville, always welcome, and Matthew of KBOO's Gremlin Time, his monthly short story reading enterprise. And we'll be back sometime later this year with yet another very special edition of Film at 11.
You're listening. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like a broken record, but you are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Listen sponsored. Now, become a member now. Become a member not only because everything you hear is straight, everything you hear is the late, everything here is great, but we also want you to become a member because we want you to get in there and put your shoulders next to the wall like we're doing. Help pay some of them electric bills, some of our toilet papers, our napkins, our portable plates, portable knives and forks. But better than that, even for the staff, the guys are working hard here at KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And this is Screaming Jay Hawkins telling you why you got to do it. You got to do it not because it's an order, not because it's mandatory, not because it's a must, but it's because this is the only place where you're hearing the right stuff. You're hearing the truth, you're hearing the good sound, and you're digging people who knows what it's all about. So pick up on a few things and lay down some of them other things and just dig KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And remember, I said so. I, Screaming Jay Hawkins, I ain't walking, I'm talking. I'm squawking. Become a member now. Become a member of KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. I'm about to sign off. Bye.
KBOO is in the middle of our annual spring membership drive. It's that time of year where KBOO is all abuzz, and we need you to come jive with our radio hive. Help us reach our $56,000 goal and keep the hive alive. Just go to kboo.fm/give or mail a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And thanks!
You're listening to Understanding Homelessness on KBOO Portland. We're excited to launch a new show on KBOO Community Radio called Understanding Homelessness with Dr. Marisa Zapata, a professor from Portland State University and director of the Homelessness Research and Action Collaborative. Each show will explore a different aspect of homelessness through the lens of people with lived experience, as well as other experts in research, policy, and programs. Tune in at 11 a.m. on the first and third Fridays of every month. But before we get started today, I wanted to remind listeners that you are tuning in to member-supported KBOO Portland. KBOO is in the middle of our annual spring membership drive. 80% of our funding comes from our members, so show your support. Become a member today at kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
Hi, y'all. I'm Marisa Zapata. I'm an associate professor of land use planning at Portland State University and director of PSU's Homelessness Research and Action Collaborative, a research center dedicated to reducing and preventing homelessness, where we lift up the experiences and perspectives of people of color. In each episode, we will help clear up misconceptions about homelessness and to answer what it would take to prevent and end homelessness in Portland and beyond. In this first episode, we clear away some of the rhetoric to identify the key questions that frame this discussion.
Hey,
the recurring themes around homelessness, and that is the question about unsheltered population. How do we best serve people who are unsheltered? And this is a question that I get all the time. And it's usually gauged in this question of how do we solve homelessness? And I find myself spending a lot of time trying to explain to people, well, we can try to solve homelessness, and or we can think about how to best support people while they're living on the street or experiencing homelessness. And those aren't actually quite the same questions. So we know, regardless of the circumstances someone finds themselves in, the best way to end homelessness is through housing. And oftentimes there is some kind of support service that comes with that, that may be in addition to what the average person might need to stay in and access their housing. So that's what we know. And so when you ask someplace like the Joint Office of Homeless Services what they're doing to serve people who are experiencing homelessness, the answer is and should be that they're trying to create enough affordable housing for people to move into with the necessary services to fit the needs of those particular people. Now, for a lot of reasons, and many that I don't fully understand, producing or acquiring or maintaining or making available housing is not fast. And I think that's a really important question that has a whole lot of nuance to it that we can easily look past. There's also the question of how do we create the services to help people, particularly people who've been living outside or living with homelessness for a long time, how do we help them get into and to be able to stay in their housing? It's not as simple as we might like to think it is. So that is one set of questions, the production of housing and services, appropriate services to help people. The next question becomes, if we want to accept that housing and services are taking time to come online, what do we do in the face of people who are suffering? And in particular, how do we deal with the fact that there are people suffering whom we can see? Again, a lot of times when people are asking me about homelessness, they're asking me about the people that they can see living on the streets and the people who are attracting their attention on the streets. And those tend to be people who have some sort of behavior that is getting your attention because it's unusual, abnormal in your mind, sticking out in your mind. And so, you know, people will come to me and say, well, why don't we just make a bunch of tiny home villages? Why don't we just make a bunch of emergency shelters? Why can't we use Wapato to put people into housing to recover? And the reality is that all of those solutions may work for some people. None of those solutions will work for everyone. And even more complicated is that the solutions all cost money and take time. And these particular set of solutions that I just mentioned may or may not actually serve the people who are gathering your attention the most. Because almost anything in which we are investing in right now requires some sort of rules. Most of our emergency shelters are temporary, and right now a number of them are gonna have a hard time functioning in COVID. For disease spread, but even there, you have a number of them that have rules or regulations that aren't going to work for the people that you might be paying the most attention to. And so we break down this conversation even more. We have a question of what should we invest in to help people who are suffering on the streets? It's not going to be a single solution, and it is not going to be cheap to do it well. And so then we have to deal with the fact that we might be looking at spending a lot of money to making people comfortable while we're also waiting for affordable housing to come online. And so then we're left with a question of, okay, do we want to continue to accept affordable housing coming online in a slower rate? Are there things that we might sacrifice or change or spend more on to make it happen faster? And or are we willing or wanting to spend more on services to support people who were unsheltered, and what should those services be? So I'm going to be interviewing people to help fill in the gaps of knowledge around all of these complicated questions, with some people who have lots of thoughts and experiences in these topic areas, to help you have a little bit more information about what we can do as we move forward as a community on homelessness.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Understanding Homelessness with Dr. Marisa Zapata on listener-supported KBOO Community Radio. If you're enjoying this discussion, show your support for this program and all your favorite KBOO programs by donating to KBOO's Spring Membership Drive today at kboo.fm/give. KBOO is community-supported and community-focused radio, bringing you voices from your communities, such as our next guest, Jessica Mathis and Calvin with Welcome Home Coalition. They talk about the speaker advocate program and the value of hearing and connecting to people with lived experience of homelessness.
Welcome, y'all. It's great to have our guests who are coming to us from the Welcome Home Coalition Advocacy Training Program. We're going to hear from two exciting guests, Jessica Mathis, who is working at Welcome Home Coalition, and Calvin, who is one of our peer advocates. Is that what your title is? Like, yes. How are we describing the people in the program?
So far, we've called our folks advocates.
Okay, so why don't we just start with a basic question? What is the Welcome Home Coalition?
So the Welcome Home Coalition is a coalition of agencies, individuals in Portland who are looking to just further the idea that everyone deserves a place to call home. And that can be through different interventions, whether that is increasing affordable housing, increasing home ownership, increasing housing programs like permanent supportive housing, or any other sort of subsidy or support that'll keep people safe in housing.
For listeners out there, first, I am on the Welcome Home Steering Committee. And also, Welcome Home Coalition was instrumental in the creation and passing of two of the area bonds that are addressing affordable housing, the City of Portland bond and then the Metro housing bond. So if you're wondering how things get made and how they happen, Welcome Home Coalition was a driver at both of those discussions. Jessica, what is your job?
So I am the regional organizer with Welcome Home, which is a relatively new position. So I came on right before the start of the pandemic. And the goal for my job is to create trainings that engage folks with lived experience of homelessness and housing instability, so that people can advocate for themselves and for their community.
So what is this program all about?
We really wanted to do this advocacy training program. I have a social service background. I worked as a domestic violence advocate and ran a housing program for about 6 years. And in that time, there was policy work being done and there were sort of these trainings for folks to get engaged, but a lot of these trainings were either paced or done in a way that wasn't very trauma-informed. They weren't accessible to a wide variety of people. And, you know, depending on the audience, those trainings can be really great. You come to Salem, you take the time, you do this day training, you go and you speak to your legislator, but that isn't necessarily the greatest format for everybody. And especially for folks who are not sharing, you know, I think it's a little bit easier for people in social services, people who run agencies, to share stories that they witness, or maybe even past experiences that they have, you know, moved past. I experienced homelessness as a youth, but I think for folks who are either currently in that trauma or it's a little more recent, it takes a little bit more education and a little bit more support to make sure that folks are able to present their stories the way they want to present them. They have agency over those stories and they know where and why they're, you know, doing it and showing up. So that's sort of the idea behind our program that has yet to have a snappy name, but that's kind of, you know, the goal.
I often think snappy name pressure and acronyms is actually a reflection of historically white institutions. right? That we need to be able to sum up everything that is messy and complex in a snappy name or in an acronym. So I'm all for the long names that describe the things. One of the things I wanted to follow up that you had said is this idea of trauma-informed. So I feel like that's a phrase that gets thrown around all over the place. Could you talk a little bit about what trauma-informed work looks like with the work that you're doing?
I definitely agree. It gets thrown around, I think, especially outside of, I come from the domestic violence sphere of work, and I feel like we take trauma-informed care very seriously, but I have seen it thrown around a little bit more casually in the broader systems. So for me, trauma-informed care or trauma-informed trainings would be largely, firstly, centered on the folks in the training, right? Like, yes, we have a direction and an idea and concept, but these trainings are for and about the communities we're serving and whatever their needs are. And it could be, I think trauma-informed is anything from like really simple stuff. Are people comfortable? Are they fed? Are they able to concentrate? Are you open to hearing about other people's concerns outside of the training and making sure they're in a good space to be in that training? All the way to like, how are we talking about sharing the story? What rooms are we in? Informed consent is really important. Do people know where their stories are going, who they're talking to? Are we making sure not only are the training spaces, you know, safe and sort of free from judgment and interrogation, but are the people who we're inviting to listen to our folks, or we bring the tables we're bringing our folks to, are those places where people feel like heard and like their stories have meaning? I was an advocate doing this job for years, and I had spaces where I felt like I was invited to be like the Black person, you know? And I think when we think trauma-informed, it's not just individual trauma, but also like systemic trauma as well. So like, are we asking people to show up and do all this labor and represent broad communities, or are we coming to people? Are we giving something back? What are we also doing to make the relationship like reciprocal, where the community, you're not just drawing resources out of community and labor and energy?
Right. So extraction is how I describe it.
Yeah.
Right. It's literally like people are coming in to extract things from us, from other marginalized communities, and say like, look, we took the thing and now we're trying. I'm really grateful that y'all have taken this up. We get so many asks to magically produce people to share their stories, and it is so messed up. But at the same time, like, we want people to be able to share their stories if they want to. And so I love this model, and I love how you're thinking about the work. Let's talk to Calvin. Hi, Calvin. How are you?
Hi, doing good. Good listening, learning from you guys, listening to Jessica and you talk.
Do you have any reactions to what she was saying?
No, I just got a better idea of what she does, and I'm a recipient of that. Like, when I heard her talking about how we want to try to have a good environment in a place and where people can feel comfortable sharing and this type of things, this is what I noticed that she does really well with CAC. She, amongst her other duties, she has a group of homeless people that have overcome homelessness and come together as an advisory group. And they're learning to try to, a lot of people don't have as much experience as you or Jessica. And so they come in and they try to contribute. And then Jessica's job seems to be to teach people how to do that. Contribute the knowledge that you have with your experiences and to be able to contribute that in a way that other people can learn from it and help, hopefully apply it to helping with the problem. Homelessness.
You mentioned a CAC, which I'm assuming is a community advisory committee.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, and, miss.
And I'm great with ma'am. I'm from Texas, so ma'am is great. You're a ma'am at 18. Okay. So what is that committee advising? Who are they advising?
Okay, what we're doing there, and when I first got invited, I was very excited to be invited to be a part of it, and I've been a part of it for 3 years now. But we come together, and these are people that have been involved with JOIN, which I have. I experienced homeless, and JOIN helped me. I can't give them enough kudos, being a great organization that really is one of the best in Portland. and the counselors and everybody that helped me there. And so I went there and was helped and developed a relationship with a lot of other homeless people going through that place at the same time as me, and a lot of ability to be involved in the community with JOIN. We do neighborhood cleanups and we have a community garden and these type of things, ways to be able to help and contribute. But after you go through that and then you've overcome homelessness somehow, got yourself a place to live, and you're better off now. And so then at that point, you're a person that might end up at CAC because you're trying to give back. You benefited from their program. They helped you. And it kind of puts it into your heart to want to try to help other people that have been through the same thing as you, and especially to JOIN. I want to be able to help JOIN because I know how hard they work to try to help homeless people. So we come together, and then so basically you learn there at CAC. You learn how to go into a meeting according to Robert's Rules of Order. I mean, you go in and you kind of, you know, not talk over other people and wait for your turn and stay focused and keep your, you know, you just learn how to function in a meeting in a way that you can contribute something and not disrupt the meeting, this type of thing. And then from there, we get to the point where it's kind of flattering. They ask us our opinions about housing projects they're developing and things that might seem over our head, you know, like, what do I know about that? I'm just a homeless person that overcame homelessness. But they really want to know, and they take that information and they use it because it has value. It really does, to get people that have been through that experience themselves and give them the ability in a structured environment like a CAC meeting to communicate the knowledge that they have is what CAC is all about, giving people the ability to contribute something to, you know, and try to help make a difference. I love CAC. I've been going there for 3 years. If I was a millionaire, I'd still be going there.
I was just going to say that what you have just described is absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I know that you're saying that, you know, what do you know? But you know what works for you and for the people that you know. You've also, I think, countered some stereotypes that unfortunately a lot of our listeners might have about people who've experienced homelessness. And I think one of them is this idea that, or just like this larger thing of giving back, that you're not someone who was freeloading or just trying to take something, but that you have decided that you want to commit to continuing to give back. And mm-hmm. I wondered if you had anything more that you wanted to share about that.
My experience with JOIN, they have outreach people, and these people are trained and they have a lot of knowledge on how to go out into the world and encounter people and determine what it is they can do to help them. And I met a lady that was there. She's gone away. Her name was Diane. And she was an Indian, which I'm a Native American. So I had a kind of a little bit of a bond with her. And she became my friend before I even knew that she was a counselor or joining or homeless. I just happened to be homeless in my truck and she just happened to be coming around. And it took me about a month to realize, wait a minute, this girl is part of some kind of organization that wants to help me. And then she was also a Native American, and she also had a dreams and goals, just like the homeless people do. And she shared her stuff with me, just like I shared my stuff with her, and she achieved that. She's no longer a JOIN. She wanted to be a teacher. Now she's a teacher. These are amazing people that do what they do, and it takes a lot of effort on their part. It's more than just a job. You know, they're involved with people's desperate situations and people that really have these needs that are so overwhelming, you know, and then they're limited in the way that they can deal with that. Now, with regards to the homeless people, I am struggling with a lot of things that handicap you in trying to help homeless people. I judge, and I don't like lazy people, and I don't like drug addicts and things like this, you know, but I think I've learned enough, I've grown enough in my experience that I check myself when I'm doing that. When I'm judging people, and I want to, you know, put somebody in a category, you know, homelessness or whatever, I got to stop myself because, you know what, I've been involved with people enough where I can pass that judgment, and I'm just going to pass them on the street. I'm going to see them, and I'm going to find out that I was wrong, you know. And I've done that enough times to realize, man, oh, man, homelessness is not a situation that you can look at and say, well, there's a bunch of drug addicts or lazy people or there's so many issues going on. You know, there's so many different reasons why people are homeless, and there's so much homelessness that is undeserved. You know, people that are struggling with stuff, and people that really have the willpower and the heart and the desire and the willingness to work and whatever it takes to overcome their problem, yet they can't because their homelessness situation involves something that they need help with, whether it be mental illness, whether it be addiction, whether it be abuse that they've been through, or whatever it is. I just know that JOIN is a place that they look at that. They try to identify what's going on. How can we help? Can't just help every person the same way. The only thing I can say about, you know, you asked me why I want to give back to JOIN. They did me well, took care of me and provided for me and helped me and encouraged me, were there for me and got me out of my problem. They helped me. I got myself out of it, but they helped me. And also, that I know by contributing to JOIN, like if somebody looks around and they're like, oh, what do I want to donate somebody? Salvation Army, this place, that place, the other place, me, I'll pick JOIN. Because I know that they make a difference and that they, so those are the two reasons. I know that if I can get back to JOIN somehow, if I can help JOIN do what they're doing, I'm helping somebody do a good thing.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Understanding Homelessness with Dr. Marisa Zapata on listener-supported KBOO Community Radio.
The other two things that you had mentioned that I think, again, are really great examples for people who are housed, the idea of a neighborhood cleanup and a community garden. Mm-hmm. Where did those come from? What do they look like?
Here's the thing is that I'm a big person on dignity. I talk about people's dignity with regard to homelessness. I believe that a lot of homelessness is turning into chronic homelessness, where the homeless situation becomes harder and harder to solve. When a person, I'm gonna say degenerates or de-escalates or whatever to a point where they can't take care of their personal hygiene, they ain't got no clean socks to wear, they can't shave, they can't get up in the morning and put their best foot forward, they ain't got nothing to eat. You know, and that person there, and then the problem becomes, and there's nobody there to help them or nothing. What are they going to do? Get up in the morning and go get a job? No. Nobody can. You couldn't. I couldn't. You know, I mean, nobody could in that situation. But big time with dignity for me is that we need to try to help people maintain their dignity, give them, you know, the ability to put their best foot forward, to try, to be able to give them the tools they need to try. Now, these community gardens and these chances to go out and clean up trash in the community and these things like that give a homeless person the dignity and the pride or the pleasure or whatever you want to call it of being able to be a part of the community and do something that helps. They want to be able to help in the community. They don't just want to be helped and just receive and feel like a bum, you know what I'm saying, or feel like, you know, I can't do anything for anybody, but you know, they want an opportunity to be able to contribute something. That's why people in CAC, that's why people come to the, we haven't been able to have our community garden this summer due to the pandemic and stuff, but I missed it. We just grow vegetables and give them to the community. And I miss being able to go out and clean up the trash in the neighborhoods. We organize in different types of community things that we organize. Once we did a thing to help people with their taillights and running lights for their cars. You know, homeless people are living in their cars and sometimes they don't have the signals and the wherewithal to fix them or whatever. So,
do you ever have people who are housed come out and work with you at the same
time? Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And there's a lot of people in the community that they're trying to do when they listen to your podcast. They're trying to understand. And one of the best ways to understand is to go get involved. And there's other groups. There's groups that are, you'll see Christian fellowship groups or youth groups, things like this, team cleanup, you know, these community type things that are teaching kids a sense of community. And you'll see them come along and they'll come to learn, work with us on a neighborhood cleanup project, and they'll work alongside homeless people. And maybe in that way, they get a little understanding of, well, wow, this is really a person. They're out here cleaning up for no, you know, donating their time, and maybe they're not such a bad person. She's a homeless person. They have an hard time and they're trying to fix it, you know. I'm kind of a champion of, if I'll take a moment to say, I'm kind of a champion of the dignity thing, of trying to find people. Of course, there's that outreach work that goes along, that says, okay, here's where we can, let's focus here on some clean socks, on a clean pair of clothes, on an ID card, on an opportunity to get a job, or provide the first and last month's rent of housing, whatever, on that whole scope of things that joint can do to help a person. Mental health issues, a bunch of addiction. Well, if you go to day room, you're gonna see a bunch of mental health issues, a bunch of addiction, a bunch of strife and struggling. And if you could just imagine, well, let me go in this room and figure out, okay, how am I gonna help that person? How am I gonna help that person? How am I gonna help that person? You could be a genius. You still wouldn't be able to. I mean, you'd have to get that person, talk with him, understand what's going on with him. There's a lot of stuff you'd have to do before you can even decide, should I give him $5? You know, or should I, you know, I mean, sign him up on the shower list, or is this person ready to go get a job, or, you know, or what's going on? Where is this person? Does this person need drug treatment, or does this person need a mental health treatment, or, you know, what's going on?
So if I can interrupt for a second, because you are answering so many of the questions that I hear from people who are housed all the time. You know, one of the things that I think people who are housed really don't understand is that this model that Joyne uses, which in the shop talk is person-centered, right? So it's approaching everyone, as you described, as an individual and understanding them, takes time, right? It's like you're saying, like you have to know a whole lot to know whether this is going to work or this is going to work, and you got to try the things out. And I think that people who are housed don't understand the importance of the relationships that you're talking about, and that developing them take time and they have to be prioritized. So thank you, because I think you have illustrated that just so beautifully. What was helpful to you that people who were housed did while you were houseless? Or what do you think people who are housed could do to better support people while they're waiting for housing?
For me, when I was struggling with homelessness, and what helped me, what people did for me that helped, somebody to talk to about what's going on in your life, somebody you can open up and be honest with and not be embarrassed about your situation. Well, I'm broke, you know. I don't have the wherewithal. I need to be over to the other side of the town and try to see about a job. And I need to, you know, whatever it is that you have to do, you don't have the ability to do that. And sometimes even if you don't have the ability to do that, and somebody doesn't have the ability to give you what you need to do that, still it's okay. It helps to be able to talk to somebody. Then maybe you can come up with a solution. But it helps to be able to talk. It sure helps to be able to. There's the basic need. You know, if somebody's come on over to my house and let's have a cup of coffee. You know, or I'll fix you breakfast, or do you need to wash a load of clothes, or do you need to take a shower? You know, I get that down and dirty with it with homeless people. I'll help somebody. And I'm not naive. I mean, you got to be really careful with that type of thing. I wouldn't recommend that everybody in the community go out and start letting homeless people come over to their house and wash their clothes. People that takes time, and people that a lot of people won't even see. Like with me, you won't see how hard my situation is, because I'm not going to let you know, because there's an amount of pride involved, you know. But the people that do see, you notice, I mean, usually the reason that they see is because they bother to stop and listen. So then they see, you know, and then that gives them the ability to try to offer some kind of help if they're so inclined.
It's amazing to me how far that can go. I remember one day somebody in my building who was most likely experiencing homelessness dropped their scarf, and I just instinctively bent down and picked it up and handed it to them. And they were like, thank you so much for doing that. Most people would never have done that.
I get that, yeah.
And just, you know, the image of that kind of just basic humanity and what that can do. You know, it just sounds like to me you're talking about neighbors helping neighbors.
Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, it goes on. I mean, how can somebody help you? I mean, I received help by literally being able to wash a load of clothes at somebody's house, maybe sleeping on somebody's couch, maybe parking my van in their driveway. Just whatever it took to get through to a point. Now, I'm not homeless anymore. I live in a home and I pay my rent. I am fairly secure. I got my mental health treatment now. That was the issue with me. I needed mental health treatment. I'm kind of okay now. But, you know, getting through that process, there were people that helped me. I guess you have to love, have compassion, care about somebody a little bit. That makes a big difference, you know.
And, compassion can go a long way.
Go a long way, you know. I just don't know what the solution to the problem is. Or I know how people helped me. They helped me materialistically, opening up their arms to me, having compassion for me, helping me, coming up with ideas for me, and pointing me in the right direction. You know, if I say anybody can end up homeless, I think maybe that might be, maybe a lot more people might know that today after going through the pandemic than they did before. You know, and then we might have a little more hard lessons to learn along the way, but.
When I talk to people who are housed and who are still trying to work through compassion and still trying to really work through how to show up, mm-hmm. you know, they'll ask me, well, how can I help? And I'll say, just be a neighbor. Start by saying hi to someone. Mm-hmm. Ask somebody how their day is and have a chat. And then they're like, okay, well, what organization should I give money to? Or do we need camps or this, this, and this? And I'm like, but what I said was to just start saying hi to people, learn someone's name. And yet they immediately pivot away. And so what you're describing is exactly what people need to be doing, but they have a hard time hearing. And so maybe hearing it from you, they can be more open to the idea. You've talked about your experiences with homelessness throughout the discussion. Is there anything else you would like to share?
Try to understand what's going on. Try to take a look at the problem. Don't assume that you know what's going on. Even if the evidence might seem overwhelming. You know, you're looking at these people are bums, you know, they ain't got to, you know what I mean? Try to get knowledge to understand by getting on your podcast or, you know, or getting involved in any of the ways. There's a lot of ways the community can be involved in helping the homeless. And I've seen them do it, and they do it well. And there's a lot of love there, you know, people that are handing out a hot bowl of soup in the wintertime and people that are going around the homeless camps and they're trying to love on those people and help them and see if they need anything. There's a lot of that. And I think those people that do that might not sound like a fun thing to do with your day off. It's definitely going to be a learning experience. If you care, then you can at least understand the issue and how you're going to vote on a bill or how you're going to contribute your time or what you're going to do to help. At least you can have some knowledge to be able to try to do that.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Understanding Homelessness with Dr. Marisa Zapata on listener-supported KBOO Community Radio.
I mean, I think this is great, Calvin. Like, you've given us so much great information, and I can't thank you enough for sharing your story like this. You have learned how to tell your story beautifully.
Well, my teacher is. She's one.
Yeah. I mean, it has been, y'all have done some remarkable work. And have an amazing story.
You did such a good job.
It means a lot to me that she says I did a good job, because I couldn't have did this a couple months ago to give impact statements, to influence policy, to help people to make decisions that are gonna work. That's what we're trying to do, right?
Jessica, how will people share their stories going forward?
I wanna start by saying that this makes me just so happy that people can speak for themselves. One of the things I almost makes me cry, it's so personally painful thing. I would go with people to agencies, you know, DHS, and people would say something for themselves and then they wouldn't get heard. I would go with them. I would repeat the exact same thing, but as a professional. And all of a sudden things happened. And so for me, it's first and foremost where people want to share their stories, but we're hoping to bring people to implement the implementation meetings for
Affordable Housing Services measure.
Yes. And we're hoping that folks are, you know, able to inform how and where we direct services, so, or how those services are created, because it's not just enough to have the money for those things. They need to be put in the right pots, and And I think the people who've received those services or who've been through the system should be the ones leading those conversations. I think a lot of us have good intentions, but not any practical experience. So I think that's kind of like the next place. But I think we want people everywhere they want to be. I don't think there should be breakdown. And I think the one positive thing about the pandemic is I really hope that these spaces remain accessible. And while there definitely is a tech divide, and that is something that we've worked with, at least people have the chance. You know, we work with a lot of folks with disabilities or, you know, people who are parenting, and, you know, they don't can't necessarily take the time out of their day at, you know, 2 to 4 o'clock to drive 60 miles to a Capitol or to show up at a space. So I guess that was a very long way of saying everywhere, and more importantly, with this supportive services measure and making sure that we are actually using the money in a way that benefits.
And for listeners, the supportive housing services measure was the major, major revenue measure that many of y'all voted to support last or 2 years ago now. It's a metro-wide revenue measure that is going to provide unparalleled money for supportive services and eviction prevention and rents and housing stability for people who've experienced homelessness or on the cusp of homelessness. This is a very unusual kind of measure. We have very few measures in the country or revenue streams in the country that allow for such an investment in supportive services. And so seeing how all of this work is connected, right? There's the policy groups, there's the way things are getting implemented, there's the lived experiences that people can help inform these policy processes. It's a lot of work and a lot of intricacy, and there's some really great people working on all of these things behind the scenes. Jessica, any last thoughts?
I think if I had to ask of people just one thing, we do a lot of work to prepare people to be heard by other people. Calvin, for example, is an amazing person and has so much knowledge. We're not working to make him more knowledgeable. We're working to be able to have
get
folks
the
tell them. Yeah, to get the knowledge out.
Get it out of the brain in a way that people can understand.
Right. Yeah. What I need for other people is to listen. You're in a position to take the time to listen. You have the stability, the education. If I had one thing, if I could say one thing, it's just like if people would just take the time to listen to people, even when it sounds like, you know, maybe they're not saying exactly what you want to hear or how to hear it, but to listen to people and just meet people where they're at, but truly meet people where they're at. And none of these folks, we're not putting ideas in people's heads. We're helping people present their ideas. And I would just ask that people make that process easier by truly listening to people and not discounting people because they don't speak the way that you do or they don't have the same abilities that you do.
And if I can add to that, one of the things I work with my students a lot on in planning is that we're asking people to learn how to share their stories and their knowledge in ways that are about dominant societal positions, right? So we are having to spend time, and people who have this knowledge and these experiences are having to spend time learning to share information in ways that college-educated, middle and upper-class people have been trained to receive messages. So we start to often turn off, you know, house people, college-educated, will turn off if we start to hear somebody with a more wandering story because they're not telling their story efficiently or effectively. And that's how we label it, as opposed to what you're talking about, Jessica, listening where people are at. People are giving their stories and their messages. Sometimes that's actually very culturally specific, right? Like, I'm from a storytelling tradition, right? We got long stories. So it's wonderful that y'all are doing this work, and it's amazing that Calvin is committed to trying to do this. It's also something that we shouldn't have to need to do, is that if people would just listen more, we could skip the part of helping people tell their stories in a way that translates to bureaucracy or translates to middle and upper class values.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for making time for us and for sharing so much. It was really beautiful, and just y'all are doing great work.
That was Jessica and Calvin from Welcome Home Coalition, a group of organizations working together to advance the idea that everyone deserves a place to call home. To learn more, go to welcomehomecoalition.org. And to learn more about Join, the organization Calvin mentioned, go to joinpdx.org. You are listening to Understanding Homelessness with Dr. Marisa Zapata on listener-supported KBOO Community Radio. If you're enjoying this discussion, show your support for this program and all your favorite KBOO programs by donating to KBOO's Spring Membership Drive today at kboo.fm/give. KBOO is community-supported and community-focused radio. That's it this week for Understanding Homelessness with Dr. Marisa Zapata. Join us the first and third Fridays at 11 a.m. See you next time. I'm
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM and streaming on the web, kboo.fm. I'm Don Jacobson, and moving on, we'll be here in just a few minutes right after the news.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy viernes 6 de mayo del 2022. Esta semana, el secretario general de la Organización de las Naciones Unidas, Antonio Guterres, se encuentra en Nigeria, donde advirtió que la invasión rusa de Ucrania está provocando una creciente crisis de hambre en África. Un nuevo informe de Human Rights Watch encuentra que la invasión rusa de Ucrania ha empeorado la inseguridad alimentaria, particularmente para los países africanos que ya estaban experimentando una crisis de hambre.